CBS World News brings you the news of the world on Monday, June 1st. Once again, Columbia's correspondents are standing by in world capitals to bring you the latest reports direct by shortwave radio. This morning, we shall call in Australia and London and will attempt to bring you a report from Moscow. But first, here are the highlights of this morning's news. In London, American Army Chief General Arnold said our bomber and fighter planes will soon attack Germany. Fighting on the Kharkov front has dwindled. Heavy action is reported around Kalinin, about 100 miles northwest of Moscow. The British announced the capture of German General Kruvel. He's second in command of the Axis forces in Libya. And now to bring you more news and to call in Columbia's correspondents abroad, here is Harry Marble.
Before calling in Australia this morning, here are the latest reports on the underground fight against the Nazis in occupied Europe. 82 is now the number of Czech patriots who have fallen before the guns of Nazi firing squads in retaliation for the critical wounding of the number 2 Gestapo chief, Reinhard Heydrich. 20 more persons were executed in Prague yesterday. Heydrich, meanwhile, is reported to be near death. Several blood transfusions have failed to alter his critical condition. And even if he does live, Czech quarters in London say that he will be paralyzed totally for life. One of the bullets severed his spinal cord. Our first report direct this morning comes from the Southwest Pacific. After a brief pause, we take you to Australia.
CBS Australia.
William J. Dunn reporting. The war came to the very doorsteps of Australia's largest city last night, exactly 1 week, less than 6 months, after the first Japanese blows fell in the Pacific. From the standpoint of damage done, the results of the first Japanese attack on Sydney can be termed negligible. But the fact that three enemy submarines actually did penetrate their famous harbor and damage one small boat has had a marked effect on the people of Sydney. And the fact that all three of the underwater raiders are believed to have been sunk proves that the enemy did not find the port unprepared. The attack came last night and was marked by a series of unheralded detonations, punctuated by machine gun rattling and the sharp bark of small guns. The force of the explosions caused the depth charges, set houses on the nearby shores, and excited considerable comment. But few guessed what actually had taken place in the brief space of a few moments. Several hours after the last explosion had died away, we were able to get a fairly complete story of the attack. But the public announcement didn't come until 2 o'clock this afternoon, and it literally stunned the Sydney public. Even the press seemed unprepared for the story when it first broke. The early edition of one paper consigned the official communique to a one-column space on page 1, while another featured the fact that three enemy subs were believed destroyed and gave the news that Sydney itself had been attacked secondary position. In the following edition, however, the papers hit their stride and took it to New York style. Black type came into play and pictures of midget type drop subs were used generously. Of the people themselves, probably the greatest reaction was stunned incredulity. Even those who heard the terrific concessions in the harbor had decided that it was merely gun practice and found it hard to realize that the enemy had actually been within firing distance of their city. As the communique stated, the attack was entirely unsuccessful. Military objectives, which undoubtedly had been selected as targets for the raid, were not touched, and only one small harbor boat was damaged. It is assumed that the midget craft were similar to those used in the Pearl Harbor attack, just large enough for two men, a commander and a mechanic. Inasmuch as the submarine captured in Hawaii had a range of only 150 to 200 miles, it's believed the craft which visited Sydney were operating from another ship somewhere off the east central Australian coast. There are no bases within range of the type of craft which aided the Pearl Harbor attack from which these boats could possibly have operated. Most Australians with whom I have talked today believe the Sydney attack will have, to some degree, the same effect on this country that the Pearl Harbor attack had on the United States. And it will awaken the people to the very real danger confronting this country and convince even the staunchest of the Cast Top and Hill group that in a war of this magnitude and ferocity, nothing is impossible, and that relaxation, mental or physical, can be fatal. This is William J. Dunn, Australia, returning to CBS in New York.
Next, across the Atlantic to the British capital, we take you now to London.
CBS London. Charles Collingwood reporting. London is still jubilant this morning over Saturday night's mass air raid on Cologne. We still don't know the extent of the damage which was caused at Cologne, but the information that comes trickling in suggests that the 1,000 British bombers brought off the most destructive single raid in history. Last night, the RAF did not raid Germany. Another big raid was planned to follow the Cologne attack, but at the last moment it was called off. The RAF is now committed to a policy of large-scale attack, and last night's weather was not suitable for a mass operation. The Germans, however, carried out a vicious reprisal raid on Canterbury, the first cathedral town of Britain. The Germans didn't use a big force of bombers in this attack, but then Canterbury is not a very big town. Three waves of raiders attacked the cathedral town early this morning. Apparently, considerable damage was done, much of it by fire. The British say that two churches were destroyed, but there's no news of the cathedral itself. The British are assuming that the main German objective was Canterbury Cathedral. It would be, they say. But under the old plea of not giving information to the enemy, they're not saying whether the cathedral was damaged. Three of the German bombers that came over Britain last night were shot down. There have been a good many hints in London that American flyers and planes participated in the Cologne raid. There's no official confirmation of this, but General Arnold, commanding the United States Army Air Forces, did say in London this morning that United States planes and personnel would be operating with the British in the near future. General Arnold also sent a message to the British Bomber Command congratulating them on the Cologne raid. The British Bomber Chief, Air Marshal Harris, replied saying, "We look forward to the time now so near when the United States Army Air Forces will commence operations at our side in this theater of war." In Libya, the Battle of Knightsbridge has ended, and it looks as though it's ended in a British victory. The Axis tank forces are withdrawing from the Knightsbridge area to the west. Yesterday, it was announced that the Germans had swept two channels through the British minefields for the purpose of bringing supplies up to the battlefront. Today, they are using those channels to extricate their armored forces. What seems to have happened is that the British have pinned, or had pinned, the Axis forces in the Knightsbridge area and were hammering them from all sides. The British had also succeeded in stopping the flow of Axis supplies. General Rommel's forces were in a precarious position. They had to get out or be overwhelmed. So they took the desperate chance of going through the two narrow gaps in the British minefields which extend down the desert from Gazala south to Bir Hakeim. The Germans have set up anti-tank guns at these gaps to keep off British tanks, but the passages are under continuous artillery fire and air attack. Rommel must be losing heavily in his attempt to get through, but part of his forces have passed through the gaps to the west. But today's British communique says that a large proportion of the remaining enemy tanks and transport is still to the east. It's being attacked by British troops and air forces. Today's communique also reports the capture of General Rommel's second-in-command, General Ludwig Cruwell. General Cruwell commands the German Africa Corps under the supreme command of General Rommel. His reconnaissance plane was shot down behind the British lines. This is Charles Collingwood in London, returning you to Columbia in New York.
For a report direct from the Soviet capital, we take you now to Moscow.
Direct reporting. The German counteroffensive south of Kharkov appears to have been stopped. This morning, Soviet communique states that there are no essential changes on any front. Both Hitler's desire to extend the other side of his Crimean center through Rostov to the Caucasus has been nipped. Although the operation may have been costly for Marshal Timoshenko's forces, it seems clear that after advancing so many miles into the heart of Russia, Hitler's forces are going to destruction, like Napoleon's Grand Army. Russia's great preponderance in manpower over Germany makes this mathematically clear. Just as in the game of checkers, if you have one less checker than your opponent and you exchange pieces, you are certain to lose that. Therefore, Hitler must avoid exchanging checkers or armies. Because of the number of German armies are exchanged for Soviet armies, Russia's military strength eventually will be many times stronger than the German field forces. The most poignant war news in Moscow today was the titanic British air raid on Cologne. This history-making raid was announced for the first time this morning. It was the news on a Soviet internal radio system, which has loudspeakers on street corners,
and outlets in many houses. The newspaper Pravda, the only one published in Moscow on Monday, gave Linda's description of the road of a two-column head on the back page where the foreign news is always printed. And for the first time that I recall, a little map also was printed showing Britain's geographical relation to Germany. An army of war workers had entered the war factories of Russia. Now factories have been built and existing ones extended.
Skilled workers have been called up to join the Red Army.
The result is a drive to train inexperienced turf wires entering factories for the first time. Steady Russia today is not only an arms camp, but a vast training school. In 10 months of war, 700,000 school children from 14 years up have been trained in trade schools and factories to make the arms necessary to drive the Germans out this year. And not only have these training men to become experienced factory hands, but the trade schools themselves are small factories. They make weapons while the boys and girls learn the trade. Here are some items from the Soviet home camp. The men who worked with the Germans during the month when Lubov was in German hands have been tried by the war tribunal. 8 were sentenced to be shot. It's a commentary on the Germans. But whenever they are driven from a city, they never take these betrayers with them. Stamp collectors may be interested in a new series of stamps issued in the Soviet Union. These are dedicated to the Patriotic War. The Red Army series shows artillery, infantry, and a charge of cavalrymen. Another series is devoted to war heroes. 80 million of these stamps will be printed. This is Larry Lester returning now to Columbia in New York.
And that was Moscow. Fighting on the China front today is centered in Anhui Province, 200 miles east of Shanghai, where the Chinese are developing a counteroffensive aimed at major Japanese bases in central China. The drive opened last week while an enemy force of 100,000 men forced the evacuation of the capital of Zhejiang Province on China's east coast. Fighting in Anhui is now raging chiefly in the outer defenses of Anqing and Hefei, the two major cities of the province. The Japs are said to be suffering heavy casualties in these battles. The Chinese offensive included the destruction of Japanese-held railroads and highways in the region of Anqing. And to the south of the city, other Chinese units are said to be attacking Japanese supply centers and communication lines. In a dispatch from North China, the Chinese Central News Agency reports that 9,000 Japs have been killed or wounded in a violent 11-day battle with Chinese guerrillas. The battle area covered portions of Hubei, Honan, and Shantung provinces. In Mexico City today, the stage is set for President Ávila Camacho to sign formally the measure proclaiming the existence of a state of war between his nation and the Axis powers. The declaration itself will be little more than a formality, for Mexico has unofficially been at war since May 22nd, when the cabinet voted to summon a special session of Congress to hear the president's war message. Today is the 25th anniversary of Mexico's Navy, and special ceremonies are being arranged to link the observance with the war declaration. Meanwhile, Mexican military police have a new problem on their hands as the result of a series of unexplained explosions which occurred yesterday aboard an American tanker at Tampico, killing 4 men and wounding at least 20. Once again, Columbia has brought you the latest news direct by shortwave radio. This morning, you've heard from William J. Dunn in Australia, Charles Collingwood in London, and Larry Lesser in Moscow. Harry Marble reporting for CBS World News. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.